Check 1, 2. How's everybody in the Zoom room?
Thank you.
Yeah, there's confirmation
Okay.
because they're asking, how are we? We're great. Thanks. Thanks for asking. Here. Start from the beginning. And we're gonna go here. Share screen.
I think this plugs into this. I think we are on our own.
All right, I just totally stomped on some cables. So if Zoom could once again confirm whether or not you can hear us, that'd be great. Okay, awesome.
Thank you.
You are so helpful. I Kolvitz.
We're going to get started in a minute. It's just now 11, and I'm also missing Joshua, so I won't start without him.
Should we leave the door open for a minute? Then yeah. It gets awfully noisy out there too, so I can go back and shut it after we
I guess it's timey.
Well, I'm still my coffee.
Okay.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear us okay? Yeah, great. Okay. Yeah. Welcome, everybody. I'm Joshua Barton. This is Melanie McGurr. We'll tell you a little bit more about ourselves in a few seconds. We're here to talk about, we're here to muse on morale with you. And emphasis on musing. We don't have solutions to necessarily present to you today, nor even necessarily success stories, because it's a work in progress. And maybe morale is always a work in progress. You know, we're here as managers, as administrators, working in the folio space at Michigan State University Libraries, and still kind of grappling with what it means to be in the open source world here now, 5 years deep into it, along with our colleagues at the Library of Michigan, who are along for the ride with us. We're here as humans though, too. And I just want to take a second to kind of like micro reflect on why morale is important, to try to maybe like have that be a backdrop to what we go on to talk about today. So if you can indulge me for a second, our years on this planet as individuals are numbered. And half of our waking hours that we get to spend among those years are spent working. If you're from, you know, the United States or another developed country. How awesome that so many of us here at WolfCon, this is my first WolfCon, by the way. How awesome that so many of us here get to spend those working hours in a project like Cultural Heritage, where, you know, it's all about like figuring out who we are, right? Creating the space for people to figure out who they are, what came before, what's going to come next, like the space to like figure out what are we doing here, what do we want to do here, etc. And we're doing that work in that space with those limited hours and limited years. At the same time that so many of us that are in the academic library space are hearing from administrators of the institution, like we need to focus on student success, positive student experiences. And when they're talking about these things, they're invoking belonging, right? I've come to believe that you can't facilitate belonging unless you have experienced belonging. And that brings me back to work. Like, as we're working in the cultural heritage space, working toward facilitating belonging for others, why not get to experience it ourselves? And that is the kind of thing that makes me feel like morale is really important as a manager. Okay, so if you can follow that arc, I hope, that's where I'm coming from with this as an important subject today. The roadmap for the, not the hour, the 50 minutes, probably now the 40 minutes that that we're going to breeze through today, a little bit of background on the Michigan State University Library's transition from Sierra to Folio, some of our recognition, especially retrospective recognition of the cultural shifts that that transition has entailed, kind of itemizing the impacts on morale along the way. Melanie is going to talk about an engagement survey that we have engaged in, and some lessons learned and future directions. And as we're doing all this, so I feel like I have like another presentation in my ear as I'm trying to give this one to you. So this is like a real exercise in focus for me right now. As we talk through this, I also want to like try to create some discussion here because I would love to learn from all of you. So I ask you to reflect on these things. Was there a cultural shift when you moved from whatever system you were in before to Folio, for those of you who are in Folio now? And what was that like? And in what ways did you navigate it well? And in what ways did you navigate it not so well? And what's been the biggest booster to staff morale since moving to Folio? Like, as you think about what gets people excited about doing the work that we're doing right now that you're in, when you're in Folio, what is that? And then what's been the biggest challenge? And then finally, how has your library best managed like all the overhead of open source participation, all the ways that we have to do more to engage with the community than maybe we did in systems that weren't open source? And then how have you balanced this with day-to-day operations? You know, simple, easy questions for you to give me simple, easy answers to at the end of this presentation. Okay, so more about who we are as people. I'm Joshua Barton. I'm the head of cataloging and metadata services at Michigan State University, among some other roles that I carry. I've been at MSU since 2007, a veteran of innovative interfaces platforms. I was with Millennium for a long time, and then Sierra, and then from 2020 to 2022, I served as the chair of our bibliographic migration task force under the big umbrella of our Folio migration project. And Melanie.
I'll just hop in here really quick. I'm Melanie McGurr, and I am the Associate Dean for Collections and Technical Services. I've been at MSUL, Michigan State University Libraries, since December of 2024, so not as long. And I was a Millennium Sierra user in OhioLINK for most of my career before then. And I was a co-lead before I came to MSU. I was a co-lead on the, I was at University of Akron, and all of OhioLINK was migrating to Alma. So that's where I was when I showed up at MSU.
And then just some background on MSU as an institution. We're a public university in East Lansing, Michigan, with over 50,000 enrolled students, a land-grant institution. So, you know, if you know the history there, there's some relevance to, you can connect that to something like an open source project. If you don't know the history there, it's not that important right now. You can Google it later. In 2020, when we embarked on moving to Folio, we had been with Innovative Interfaces in some iteration for around 20 years. We have a large technical services division within the library, around 45 FTE, depending on how you count. And a large proportion of those folks are long tenure staff. i.e. near retirement, right? And then we share our catalog with the State Library of Michigan, and that's been an arrangement that we've had since 2004. And our lead up to system migration, we had a new dean that arrived in 2018 who rolled out some strategic planning, which kind of wrapped up in 2019 and along the way captured some institutional desire to move from Sierra to something else. And the RFP process was born out of that. EBSCO presented Folio to us, and like in the RFP visits that we were having on the last in-person workday in March 2020, and then we all started working from home. The migration timeline from there picked up in July 2020 when the RFP committee recommended Folio, got the contract signed, did this weird like phased implementation where acquisitions went live a year before everything else went live. So we were running parallel systems for a year. Full implementation in June 2022, and then other components falling into place thereafter. Man, COVID-19 made things weird. The planning and communication around the early days of our migration process were just insane. Those first, like between March and June of 2020, that's when we were like making our recommendation of which system to go with coming out of that RFP process. And so we maybe weren't thinking as clearly as we would have liked to have been thinking, which isn't to say we made the wrong call. Just other things that impacted our migration timeline include just, you know, Folio release cycles. When we were looking at what kinds of functionality is going to drop with the next upcoming release, maybe that makes us want to wait. If there was something missing that we really needed. And then ultimately, since we were working with EBSCO, there were some staffing transitions at EBSCO that did influence when we were going to go live. So some of these impacts like lengthened the timeline, some of them shortened the timeline depending on what was going on, but it was a moving target. And then another challenge that is a kind of persistent issue for us was the recommendation that was made in the course of doing our migration planning to exclude electronic resources from our migration. So they didn't come into Folio when we migrated in June 2022, which is leaving us with a kind of bifurcated discovery experience with those electronic resources being hosted outside the catalog proper and then merged in our discovery layer. Pointing these challenges out because along with the cultural shift that's entailed, these all have morale impacts, the kind of aggregate of these factors. I just was at the Folio members meeting where it came up the importance of being upfront with libraries that are coming on board that open does not mean free. And how much of a cultural shift is involved in moving from a vendor client kind of model to an open source model. We had an abstract idea of what that would mean, like those of us in the middle of the institution, but I don't think that we had a very concrete idea of what that would mean until June of 2022, and we're like, oh, we're live, and we need to figure some stuff out. It meant a new relation model for us, no longer just a two-way relationship with an individual vendor, but a multi-way, complex and dynamic relationship with, yes, there's still a vendor involved, but also the whole Folio community and all the different partnerships embedded therein. That entailed for us an increased amount of overhead, new cognitive burdens on staff, particularly managers. I keep gesturing over here because Autumn is over there and is a partner in all of this with me. And the value that lies in active participation in development rather than just passive participation. All this together, you know, in aggregate leads to just a host of morale issues for us. And yes, there are ways in which we could have done better in the migration process that maybe would have ameliorated some of these impacts, but the situation is what it is, and now here we are trying to figure out how to address where morale challenges persist, and kind of achieve the kind of buy-in that we want to have from staff up and down the institution. And when I say staff, I'm including library faculty in that term. Achieve the kind of buy-in that we want to have for everybody to be on board. Like, this is an important thing that we're involved in. This is a valuable thing that we're involved in. And it was the right choice to make. So that culture shock piece is kind of still there from the open source transition, some leftover frustration with system limitations that we encountered when we did migrate. There was functionality that we just sacrificed. Like, we've been in parallel systems for a year now. We need to just bite the bullet and move ahead with our migration, despite the fact that some things are missing that we would like to have. Some lack of clarity that we had about how to best engage with the Folio community writ large, and lack of clarity internally about what was happening with our migration process, some communication issues that we had internally about our migration process, a 6-month period in which we had only EDS as a discovery tool. We hadn't yet rolled out our ViewFind instance, and there were some real issues, especially on the public services side of things, with that period where we were only using EDS, and then persistent confusion about the different components of our ecosystem now, like our internal ecosystem now, the difference between what Folio is, what EDS is, what ViewFind is. We can continue to try to clarify what each of those components are and what their role is in the larger layer cake of platforms and services that we're trying to offer, but it doesn't always stick with folks. During the migration, our communication was irregular and not always proactive. There are some issues that persist from that. Post-implementation, particularly within technical services and the cataloging units in technical services, concerted efforts at targeted outreach and copious documentation. So trying to improve where communication was lacking during the migration process itself, a lot of use of video tutorials, team meetings, individual one-on-one kind of pep rallies. But going forward, we want to have more systematic feedback loops. And also, we're interested in finding ways to recognize staff who are individually contributing to the development of Folio. When they recognize that something could be better, when something's not working correctly, that leads to, you know, ultimately a Jira ticket, and then that gets into a release. You know, being able to trace that back to the person who initiated it and be like, look what you did. You know, like, this is great. We're interested in being able to do that kind of thing. But on an individual level, this is an approach that, you know, Autumn and I are kind of upfront about when we were talking about how to approach our cataloging staff and folks throughout technical services, like having this emphasis on agency, the fact that staff can directly influence system development, that there's an agency that we all can exercise in that process that is different and more empowering than the arrangement that we had previously. So that includes us encouraging them to report issues and suggest those improvements. And that puts us on the hook for keeping track of those things so that we can ultimately get it up to the community and up into Jira tickets and turn it into real change. But like I mentioned earlier, we want to keep track of those individual contributions so we can loop back around to folks and be like, you did it. Thank you. All right. Over to Melanie.
Okay. Thank you very much, Joshua. So this is about when I showed up, right? December of 2024. The interview process had been in the fall, and I heard a lot about Folio. I was all Alma in my head, of course, because I was at a different institution where we were getting ready, but I knew about Folio. It was one of the RF, you know, one of the groups that had come, or one of the vendors was EBSCO that came to OhioLINK to show us different things that were possible. So it was in my mind, and I wasn't sure exactly how I was going to approach it, but one of my desires was to see how everyone felt about it. Actually, my dean asked both Sean Nicholson and I, right, the AD for Digital Initiatives at Michigan State, and he's around here and probably always at WolfCon, to do an engagement survey. And he didn't want it to be a climate survey. He just wanted to know how people were feeling. He did not want people to think that we were going to switch to something else if people were unhappy. That was not what this was about. So, and he told me that like straight off, like, this isn't about moving to anything else. This is just to see how people are doing. So, Sean and I got that survey together, but as a new leader in this division that we're in is new too. It's both collections and technical services, AD positions put into one, which is like kind of a fad now, a thing now. And I was also interested in getting information from everyone about how they felt about this new division, also how they felt about Folio. So I'll talk a little bit about the SWAT, you know, communication that we did and a retreat as well. So the Folio engagement survey, and this is why I wore my readers, so I could actually read the small print. The Folio engagement survey is something that we undertook to uncover hidden pain points, right? So that initial training issues may have evolved and different challenges into different challenges. The workflow inefficiencies that became apparent over time. And we also wanted to assess training support or training and support needs and the gaps in the knowledge that impact productivity and the opportunities for advanced feature adoption and also to guide future enhancements. And Joshua kind of talked about that a little bit with, you know, putting in Jira tickets and everything like that and feature requests based on real workflow experience and our ongoing training. And we, just a couple weeks ago, Sean and I shared out the results of the engagement survey with the entire library. And I just want to mention too that this survey went out to the entire library, not just tech services. So we sent the survey out in early April in 2025, all library employees. It was 10 questions. We tried to keep it short. I had a bunch of different people in the library look over it, right? Organizational wellness and a few other people. It was open for 2 weeks and we had 93 responses, which were aggregated, maybe, depends, aggregated and anonymized. We had 93 responses, but like we had 60 some like who went through the, you could see went through the whole thing. So that, I thought that was pretty good, even though we're a large library. And some of the things that they reported on were not surprising, I think, to a lot of us, but it was good to hear this. And you can hear the tech services in it and you can hear the public services in it, if that makes sense. Unclear system components. So staff expressed some confusion about the roles and relationships between, as Joshua mentioned, Folio, EDS, Viewfind, and Panorama. A lot of people inside and outside of tech services, as Joshua said, are still confused about what's what. So if they're complaining about something, it's often they're complaining about, they think they're complaining about the EDS, but they're really complaining about Viewfind and vice versa, right? There are training gaps due to frequent software updates. Ongoing software releases create a continuous need for updated training. And that is definitely happening in tech services. It isn't always happening on public services side. Or for selectors and things like that. Need for targeted learning. Staff requested more focused training and periodic refresher sessions. Support for non-technical staff. This came out loud and clear. Additional support is needed for staff in non-technical services areas. So again, public services, selectors. An expertise directory is needed. A clear list of go-to experts by functional area would improve efficiency. We don't have a Folio point person in the library, right? We have many people who are involved in Folio, but nobody who's like the go-to person. Unlike traditional models, like with Sierra, in my library, and even at Michigan State before this, there was a systems librarian, and that was your point person. I'm not saying one's good and one's bad. I'm just saying it's different, right? Again, a cultural shift. And mixed experiences with EBSCO support, some frustrations with the global ticketing system. And we had to give a shout out to Cassie because she's our LSE, I think it is, Library Services Engineer. Yeah, and she's amazing. But this is all, because this is all new and we're all learning together, that there were just some mixed experiences. Some other observations more on the positive side, right? Open source platforms are viewed positively and seen as consistent with the library's mission, which also includes that land grant mission that Joshua mentioned earlier. And many respondents from the survey appreciate being part of Folio's development and growth, and they value their role in shaping the platform. And I will say I've been incredibly impressed with people at Michigan State and who are serving on the SIGs, right? We have a ton of participation in SIGs. We have a ton of participation in BugFest. And so that is something that I'm really impressed with, both librarian and staff participation in all of that, because they understand, and it's been made clear to them, especially in tech services too, that this can make a difference, right? Like what you're doing here and what you're asking for, what you're picking up on in BugFest can help somebody down the road, including yourself. So I'm going back again, and I'm looking at Sean because he made a much nicer slide about this in our staff presentation. But this is kind of what Joshua and I were thinking about, this kind of what we're not used to triangle of, you know, we're very used to that older model of there is Sierra, there is Clarivate or III, and there is you. And now we've kind of complicated that by you know, we have Michigan State, we have Folio, we have EBSCO, and we also have the EDS in ViewFind. And I don't know if there's anything you wanted to add to that, Joshua, because when we were talking about it, it was like, it was this new triangulation, right, and complication that I think was often confusing to people. Am I getting that across well enough? Okay, thanks. So I also did a SWOT for just my division. So what are our strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats? And not a lot of people participated in this because they were kind of like, who is she coming in and asking me? It's okay. It's fine. I understood, but I got some good feedback. I think it would be interesting to know if I did one in a year or two, if I'd get more responses, right? Just because people were like, okay, you know, she's legit. She's not, you know, just trying to, you know, I don't know what they thought I was doing, but that's okay. I wanted to know. So everyone had a chance to fill this out in the division. So our strengths were Folio expertise, then sharing that expertise with others in the community. And that's not just, you know, in the SIGs, but also, you know, a lot of us attend WolfCon and are involved in the Slack channels and things like that too. And so one of the weaknesses was, again, this persistence that we're having problems with Folio and EBSCO. This may not be completely what the problems are, because people get confused between EDS and ViewFind, and they don't really know what the problems are. And the opportunities, Folio admin or a point person, some really exciting people thought maybe we should be doing our own instance, right? And a threat was expectations difficult to navigate, and you know, the kind of increasing, you know, that we have new updates coming, it's kind of difficult to keep up with that. And also e-resources workflows, as Joshua mentioned, we didn't really have those set up yet, and there was a lot of from the collection side of the division especially. Tech services was working on it and doing great things. We had a e-pilot workflow. By the time I got there, everything was going really well. But collections was also very concerned about the fact that we didn't have our electronic resources in Folio. Let's see. Whoops. Now I've gotten out of my... There we go. Okay, sorry. Got you excited that I was having a technical problem, but I got out of there. Then I had a division retreat. So all of this is like my part of trying to gauge morale for people, right? So after we did the SWOT, I took a look at it and I kind of like how many people basically, like I coded it basically, how many people said this, how many people said that. And I sent it back out to everyone. And I was like, these seem to be the issues we're having or we want to talk about and discuss. So what ended up happening was, I took the things that were problematic from the SWOTs, right? Opportunities and our strengths is great too. But I also took the things that we were having difficulties with and brought them into the division retreat. And the division in total is around 60 people. So it's a pretty big group. And I had organizational wellness help me with this as well. And we took three main topics, communication, advocacy, and I'm not going to remember the other one. Maybe I have it on my notes. Sorry. There was something else that we were concerned about, but advocacy was the one where Folio came up the most, right? So that's kind of what I wanted to talk about. So what came up in the discussions of the division retreat, and we had, you know, basically everybody split into teams and talking over some questions around these concerns. And one of the concerns was time for SIG and folio centered training for all staff, more communication around folio and opportunities, and encouragement and communication around Bugfest, because people are really excited about the idea of going in and being able to try things out, like on the cutting edge, right? More than just when testing came out. And out of all of these things came some action items, right? From talking with Joshua, from talking to other managers in the division, we kind of came up with these ideas of what we wanted to concentrate on. So number one out of these, and I did some of the summary myself, but I also had ChatGPT or Copilot or somebody kind of go over everything and look and tell me what did it think? I don't want to gender it. What did ChatGPT think that were some of the points here that I needed to pay attention to? And it was basically the same as the ones that I thought we had to pay attention to and the rest of us thought. So you could definitely see through the engagement survey and through the SWOT analysis that people wanted a designated, especially for tech services, folio person, basically a point person. And they wanted to identify a lead to coordinate folio related tasks and technical services. And this would not be someone who would like take over. We have a really great folio expert in Lisa Smith from acquisitions, right? She really knows the, you know, her part of it. And she really, you know, like Joshua mentioned, acquisitions went a year early before everyone else, right? So this is not to take autonomy away from, we have Erin Weller in circulation, and she really knows, you know, her part of folio really well too. So it's not to take away from them, but to have somebody in tech services who's a point person and to support those other people. Support and also communication. So support consistent updates across the libraries on new releases, training and refreshers, and prioritize SIG participation. So allocate time and work schedules for involvement in folio special interest groups. And that is easier said than done, I realize, right? And when I gave that presentation at the staff meeting a few weeks ago, Sean and I asked people to submit ideas, but I'm trying to keep that open. Like, what else can we do to help out? And we've been concentrating on the folio point person a lot, right? We have a natural fit for someone. Someone in the division is already a natural fit for this. We've created a job description. We've discussed this with administration to get permission and to move ahead with this. But some of the main points that kind of came out of all of this sort of asking and questioning was that we need someone to create training, not just for tech services, but outside of tech services, refresher training, things like that. We need someone who will lead communication for the, you know, for folio. And we need someone who's highly organized, right? And that's, you know, tech services in a nutshell for most of us anyway. So I think this will be a great step in the right direction because there will be a person who's kind of is leading and not necessarily leading throughout the library, but leading us in tech services, but also helping others who need it, the help that they need. Because we have heard loud and clear from people outside of tech services that they're lost, that they haven't had any training since, you know, we initially migrated to folio. So this is something we're trying to pick up. And maybe next year we'll come back and talk about the job description for this person and everything. But this is where we are right now in this project. So that brings us back to the reflection questions. And I'll give it back to Joshua.
11:33. All right, there we are. That's our story. Oh, why? Nice.
Where you already live.
So, time to talk, y'all. The questions that I posed to you at the outset of the talk, if you have, you know, if you observed my request to reflect on those as Melanie and I were talking at you, I would love to hear responses that you have to any of these, but also happy to hear questions, comments, suggestions. Here comes the microphone.
Just thinking about how you guys were really early adopters. And since 2000, do you remember what flower release you were on when you went live?
I'd be kind of Iris.
Okay. And so you've seen a lot of changes over the last few years. And I'm just curious, like, how do you feel about the pace of iteration and that sort of thing? You know, you're talking about your engagement in the community, but it's just, the product's just gone a long way since you first went live. I'm just kind of curious how that fits into the morale discussion.
Yeah, if it's in a fair amount, we can point back to 2022 to contrast, like, look where we were to look where we are, and consider that pace of progress compared to what you might have had in a vended system, right? And the fact that it was, rather than one fell swoop of here's everything you were asking for, you know, it was coming iteratively, gradually. And that iterativeness and gradualness comes with its own kind of overhead too, like, because you're, it's not like, it's not like election season, you know, where you just think about it every 4 years. It's like if there were elections every 3 months, that'd actually be great if we could make that happen. Yeah, but there's, like, you know, there's cognitive work to do to pay attention to what's coming. But yes, the positive side of that is that we can say, like, look how far we've come, y'all. But sometimes it takes work to tell that story.
I have
Melanie wants to
go ahead, Melanie.
I will say there was a difference between when I interviewed and when I got on campus. It was like a few month process. And I think morale was better even when I got there, if that makes sense. So I think every month, every, you know, and I don't know if you had gone through any upgrades since in between those two. But yeah, it was, and I think people getting more involved helps a lot because they do feel like they're in on the ground floor. So I think that makes a lot of difference. And I've been trying more to make sure our administrative group is aware of the different upgrades and everything too, just because if I just kind of want it to be in their minds, right? If they're not directly involved with Folio, like, all the time, I want to remind them that it's still going on, right? And that, you know, we're dealing with this in tech services, or we're dealing with that in tech services or collections. And I think that helps because those notes go out to the whole library. So I think it helps that, you know, people see, like, oh, you know, we're getting a shout out, or especially a bug fest was exciting because then the rest of the admin group didn't really understand or know what that was exactly. So yeah,
when I first told them about bug fest, they're like, what is that? Like, yeah, they're like thinking about insects. Okay,
one comment from the chat here, from Julie: we're only halfway through the session and I've already decided I will forward the recording to my leadership. Thank you for organizing, to you too. And then a question here.
So, hey, Lucy Harrison Galileo. So it occurs to me that we're sort of, yes, your Folio is open source, but it's also, in your case and in ours, vendor supported open source, right? And that is, in some ways, I think, causing perhaps some conflicts emotionally for people. We have people who are, it's open source and I'm all in, and we have other people who are like, but it's, you know, we our relationship with this EBSCO and they need to fix things. And I'm wondering how you are navigating that sort of tension, you know, with this product that is at its core open source but also has some, you know, vendor relationship built into it.
Yeah, it's a hybrid arrangement certainly, and we carry some dissonance in navigating that, not because, like, either side of it, you know, is something that we want to reject inherently, but it's just like, what's the right way to fix a problem when we discover one, or what's the best way to engage? When the dynamics involved in that vendor client model are different from the open source model, and that it's easy to to, you know, draw that comparison between the two because they're so different. But when you're in the middle, the instinct for us anyway is to fall back to the vendor model, because that's, you know, that's part of the organizational culture of MSU. That's what we were doing for so long with a single company, that, you know, we're still in this phase of evolution of like, oh, there's a different way to do things, and how do we do that? So in response to how do we navigate it, I guess like that, with questions. Yeah, for sure. Cassie.
So Cassie helps. Sometimes she can tell us like, oh, that's something we should probably put in a ticket, you know, a Jira ticket for or something, right? That helps a lot. And I think people are getting more, at least the technical services and collections, they're understanding that. When I first landed there, I was very confused because in my other iterations of me in other places, I guess there's many me's, I was always over systems as well as technical services. So when I landed at MSU, it was confusing to me that we didn't have like a systems librarian, and systems was with Sean and his group. So we would start talking about Folio and I would look at him, but he would be like, why are you looking at me? So it was always, you know, because his group is working on Viewfind and a lot of other things, but like the meat of where things are happening and the upgrades and the importance of that is still in technical services. So I think we had to get that balancing act figured out as well.
Okay, a question from the chat. Can you please elaborate a little bit regarding exclusion of electronic resources and the threat section that you mentioned again about expectations around navigating e-resources?
Yeah, so we were going live with Iris. There was the folks we were working with at EBSCO had some real concerns about the sheer volume of e-resources that we were going to have to be pumping into data import at the time to try to keep the catalog up to date. And so they made the suggestion, the strong recommendation, that we manage our e-resources on the EBSCO side of things rather than putting them directly into Folio. Decision makers at the time took that suggestion. And so that's how our migration moved forward. And we, you know, there was like infrastructure that we built internally in terms of like positionality and so forth. Procedures to support the outcomes of that decision. And so as Melanie mentioned, we have since rolled out some pilot processes to at the very least catalog in-house firm ordered ebooks. Yeah, like things that we own to kind of get a foot in the door of exerting, you know, bibliographic control, our own agency and bibliographic control of those e-resources. But we totally want to do more, and we're exploring about how to scale that up. Autumn, our moderator, led a task force that did some environmental scan and some outreach to some of you about how you all manage your e-resources in Folio to try to bring that back to us and figure out how we can scale some of that stuff up. So it's a work in progress, but the result, as I mentioned in the slides, is a bifurcation in our discovery experience between what's in Folio and what's outside of Folio. And that's felt in negative ways on campus and especially within the library. So that's been a long-term thing that we have wanted to bring attention to resolve the outcomes of that early decision. And then the other part that they wanted us to elaborate on,
how have you navigated the expectations around our, what I would call our current e-resources situation?
Yeah, well, by trying to mobilize and make the change. Yeah, and it's been a lot of convincing folks, partners, administrators about why it's worthwhile to try to reskill and retool in this direction to get more hands-on with e-resources in the Folio context. Did you want to say anything else about that?
It has been very interesting because this division is collections and techno services. So collections is very much like, why aren't our resources in there? But also not understanding like some of the things that went on even before I got there. So it's been an interesting, but now they're all in one division together, kind of discussing, and we ask like, where do you want us to start with loading resources that we own and things like that? So there's a question over here. She's around the pole there.
Hi, Angie Rathmel with the University of Kansas. We're just now implementing or just now deciding that we're doing this. I was picking up on your note that one of the lessons you learned was more support for non-technical staff. And I wondered if you could elaborate on what that meant.
So throughout the engagement survey, especially, and just like anecdotally, I'm a walker arounder, right? So I walk around a lot and I talk to people from all over the library. I don't just walk around. I do some work sometimes too, but it's one of the ways I get to know people, especially at such a huge place. I've gotten lots of anecdotal evidence because people will trap me in the hall to talk to me about folio and why they don't like it. They may be confused about what they don't like, again, going back to that triangle, but the voices that I've heard are basically like, we don't know what we're supposed to be doing in folio. I learned something like 3 years ago and no one's really talked to me about it since. People expect me to know to go in to look at order records and things that I've purchased as a selector and know things about them, but I don't know them, that information, and I don't know. Maybe I knew it at one point, but I certainly don't know it now. Like all of that sort of stuff. Like, how do I get circ stats now? And I started kind of, we have Panorama as well. I started messing around at Panorama, but I'm totally confused. And so it's a lot, like we have some work to do to kind of catch people up, I feel. And I think we're up for it, but it's just kind of weird that it's us doing it, I guess, if it makes sense. But we might as well. I mean, we want people to like the product and understand how it's working. So does that help a bit?
Yeah, thank you for this. I really like the engagement survey and all of that stuff. I'm up with the University of Colorado Boulder. We haven't done that, but it's a really great idea. But my question is, so I've heard the theme of culture shock or concept a couple times during this conference, and I think it's really true. I do think that people go through some sort of culture shock as the migration happens. And I also kind of hear sort of like the rumblings from those outside of the folio community trying to consider, you know, they're with a legacy system. They know they need to migrate at some point and like really being fearful of that experience because many of us have, you know, the morale issue comes up at many of the institutions. So I'm wondering how we like help people at other libraries who thinking about migrating to some system, like reassure them or help them through the process or something, you know, so that it's not as scary and traumatic as it may have actually been for some of us, but we can make it better for others.
Yeah, there's two things that I think about there. One is just like the logistics of onboarding and what kinds of expectation setting needs to happen for prospective folio adopters. But then also getting to the morale piece, like how do you articulate the positive case of why is it worth it to do what looks like extra work? And, you know, maybe that's, I don't know if that's taken for granted in the open source community. It's like, well, because it's open source, you guys, but like we were able to like kind of internalize that in an abstract way when we were wrapping up our RFP process. And that was part of like the, and this aligns with our land grant mission. It's like getting on board and being able to execute agency in a software that, you know, if we're hands-on in the development process, that means it belongs to us in some way and we're making it more available for other libraries and improving it for other libraries. There are those kinds of things to gesture to, but how do you tell that story to a whole institution in a way that can buttress these kind of morale issues that are going to pop up when you make a system migration, but particularly when you're making a system migration to an open source system that brings all this extra work along with it.
I try to squeeze in one last question that I have in the chat, which is, thank you for this talk. I'm wondering if and how your regular SIG participants may be communicating updates back to library colleagues about folio project activities and planned development.
Yeah, I think that's wrapped up in the point person piece that we want to pursue. That's a lot of P's. But The coordinating of both like absorbing information about like what's going on in the Folio community and bringing that back to the library, but then also absorbing and organizing communication around and about Folio internally. There's just a lot of ways in which we could be doing a better job than we're doing, a more intentional job about our Folio engagement. And this is one of those pieces, like picking up on what's happening in all those SIGs with all the people that we have participating in them and like articulating that up around.
We are right at time.
Good. I don't want to make anyone late for lunch.
Thank you both.
For talking about